Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and we have got a rather unusual story to share with you today. My guest is Keith Richardson. His book is titled The Secret of the Butterfly Lovers, Eternal Lessons of Life, Love, and Reincarnation. It has a lot more to it than what you would ever expect. Keith, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you, Donna. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
I was really intrigued with your book, because when I saw the title, Butterfly Lovers, of course there's all kinds of little pictures, you know, that go through your mind with combinations of certain words, and yet I found that this was such a journey of experience that you were writing about, and what you went through in the way of conflict and doubt and yet exploration at the same time. It was quite fascinating. Now, it took you about 5 years to write this book, but let's talk about the Chinese legend right off the bat. Tell us about the butterfly legend.
Okay, an ancient Chinese legend that goes back 1,700 years ago tells about a couple that fell in love, and they were told by their parents they could not be together because they were from different social classes. And the young man committed suicide, and the woman was forced to marry someone she didn't love. And she eventually just, when she was going to her wedding, got out of her cart, ran to the cemetery, lightning hit the grave she was in, jumped into the grave, and they both, she came up out of the grave as butterflies. And it's probably one of the most famous and most popular stories in China, and actually, Romeo and Juliet is based on this story.
When I read the legend, I put in the margins, because I mark in books as I'm reviewing them, and I put Romeo and Juliet, a few paragraphs later, that's what you brought out. This is a classic story. Of course, it's closed in a different time, in a different space.
Yeah.
How was it that this was a story that was so important to you? What happened to you in 1994? By the way, you're an anthropologist, too. Let me toss that in for
yes.
a minute. How long have you been doing anthropology?
I studied anthropology back in the early 70s. When I got out of the Navy and went to university, I earned a master's degree at California State University in Los Angeles. And I did my field work in Central America. After I met my wife, we went to Central America together. My wife is Nicaraguan, so she is from Central America. And I've always been interested in cultures. I've always been interested in ritual. And it's something that touched my heart. But I wondered how anthropology would have anything to do with running an angel store in Ventura, California.
Which is what you do now. You're very much involved with that. What was, you know, when someone is in anthropology, you have a whole different perspective about the now.
Yes.
Because you are so involved in what went on before. What was it that brought us to where we are today? Is there a particular influence, maybe that has been carried forward psychologically we don't know about? And it goes on and on and on. I think it's just a fascinating arena, and we're discovering so much more and more. But in 1994... you went through a real shift. Tell us what happened to you.
In 1994, I lost my job. I was working as an international consultant, and I ended up getting slandered by the man that I was working with. He ended up, we ended up losing our house, we lost our car, we lost everything. And we didn't know what we were going to do. We had a house. We ended up renting a house and started renting out rooms to try to keep paying the rent. We went under welfare. So my parents felt sorry for us, and they said they would loan us the money to start a store. I'd worked in hospital systems. I kind of knew how to run a thrift store. So we did some research and found a really good spot for thrift stores was in downtown Ventura, California. So we walked the streets. Nobody wanted to rent anything to us, and the prices were too high for us. And my wife started having reoccurring dreams that the clouds in the skies would open up and angels would look down at her and smile, and she would smile back, and I thought she was having a psychotic episode.
Why is it guys always think wives are having psychotic episodes?
Well, I thought it was bad because things had gotten so bad. Things had gotten so bad for us. And she finally had a dream that a friend of hers who died the year before came to her with a golden-bound book. And she said, "Alejandro, what are you doing here? You're dead." And he said, "I know that I'm dead, but I've been sent to bring you this book." And she said, "What kind of book is it?" And he opened it up and showed her. And on white pages with black letters that told everything about angels. She woke me up at 5 in the morning and started telling me about this, and I told her to go back to sleep.
There we go again.
Yeah,
okay.
Bad. We got up in the morning, and she told our two sons about it. And our youngest son, Kevin, who was 13 at the time, said, "No, Mom, I don't think so, Mom. I really don't think so, Mom." And Francesca said, "First, your dad didn't want to hear about it, and now you don't want to hear about it. What is this?" And Kevin said, "Mom, the first thing is that you can't read a dream. One side of your brain reads, and one side of your brain dreams, and you can't do both things at the same time." She said, "But I know what I read," and continued on about it. The same day, we found a place on Main Street. It was in a really bad part of town. It had been a drug rehab center. It was boarded up, and it was next to a porno store and a liquor store. And the rep was interested in showing it to us. It was totally trashed. Francesca looked at it, and she said, "This is fantastic." I said, "No, this is awful. This won't work as a thrift store." She said, "It's not going to be a thrift store. It's going to be an angel store." And I said, "That's a bad idea. We don't know how to do retail. We don't know where to buy an angel. And if we got an angel, we wouldn't know what to sell it for." The hard part came after this, so I had to convince my dad about this, who was going to loan us some money and had signed the lease. So my dad thought it was a stupid idea. So we compromised and made it a gourmet food store with one shelf of angels. But we found we couldn't sell the food. All we could sell was the angels in the store. So we had to close out all the food and make it only angels. And we've been here since 1995 selling just angels here in Ventura, California.
Fascinating. Just fascinating. Well, you also went through something that...
In 2003, things got bad again.
Uh-huh, okay.
And that's how this book starts. This is where Secret of the Butterfly Lover starts out. In 2003, we ran into a mini depression here in Ventura County when they started the Iraqi War. They cut the money out of the bases all the way around us, and most of the people that live in Ventura County work for the government. So when they cut the money out of the bases, they cut out the funds to all the subcontractors. My son lost his job. Everybody lost his job. They sent the troops to Kuwait. The people stopped buying things here. People stopped traveling. And we started going under deep in this store. We found we had to pay $5,000 by the end of March, and we had $134 in our accounts, and we couldn't figure out where any money was going to come from at all. We hired a lady to do angels classes in our store. She was a licensed hypnotherapist, and in the class, I sit in the classes because we own the store and we don't want people just walking in and out of the store. And during the meditation, I met my spirit guide, Chong, an Asian man who we learned later was an emperor. And he gave me a very unusual message that I didn't believe. He told me that we were going to find abundance. We were going to find a ton of abundance. He said we would find abundance within 90 days. And I said, "That's too long." I said, "I've got like 2 weeks before I'm going to be kicked out of my store by my landlord, and the state of California is going to close us down for not paying sales tax." And he said, "Have faith." The next day, we get a call from Los Angeles International Airport. Someone asked for directions to the store. I was happy. At least somebody was traveling. About an hour and a half later, a young couple, looked like maybe in late 20s, early 30s, wearing raggedy Levi's, came in. And the man came to me and said, "Thanks for the directions. They were really great." And I said, "You're the ones that flew in?" I said, "Yes." I said, "Where did you come in from?" They said, "We flew in from the island of Bermuda." I said, "Are you guys on vacation?" He said, "No." I said, "Did you guys come here in business?" He said, "No." I said, "What did you come for?" He said, "We came to see you." I said, "What did you come to see me for?" They said, last week we were doing a guided meditation, and we saw angels that you have on your website by Andy Lakey. And we decided we needed to buy one of those paintings. We found you on the internet, and we flew in to get one. Well, I showed him the paintings on the wall, and they're pretty expensive. The little tiny ones are $300 or $400. But he pointed at a really big one and asked me what the price of that one was. And I said, it's $5,000. Now, usually when somebody sees, when I say that to somebody who isn't prepared, they kind of gasp and look at the smaller paintings. But he just reached into his wallet and pulled out an American Express card and stuck it in my hand and said, do you take American Express? And I said, of course. He said, can you ship this painting to the island of Bermuda? I'd never done it before, but I knew I could. The credit card went through. We shipped that painting to Bermuda. We paid off our initial debts, but we were still in trouble. A week went by, and we're here on a Sunday night in the store, and a car pulled across the street from our store, and out of the car came two people wearing navy blue blazers, a man and a woman, walked right into my store, and I noticed they were both Japanese, and the man came to me and said, I'm very embarrassed to ask, but we were at a conference today in Santa Barbara. We got up the freeway by mistake. Can you tell us how to get back on the freeway going to Los Angeles? And I told him how. I said, it's pretty easy. But I said, you know what? I don't believe in coincidences. I think you guys have been diverted to my store for some reason. He said, maybe so. I said, let me show you what we have in the store before you leave. I showed him the angels. I showed him the shrine we have with thousands of prayers on it. I took him in the back. I showed him the art we have by Andy Lakey. And I said, you know, I wrote a book about this art. And I showed him my book. And he said, oh, we like books. He said, if we buy your book, will you sign it for us? And I said, of course. And I signed the book. And they left it and let it go. I thought they were just being polite buying my book. A week went by, and I got a call from a lady who said her name was Nansuko. She said, I'm calling about your book, Andy Lakey's Psychomantium. I said, would you like to buy a copy of it? She said, no, I want to translate it into Japanese. I said, why would you want to do that? She said, last week a Japanese couple were lost. They came to your store. You gave them directions. Do you remember that? I said, yes. She said, do you know who they were? I said, no. She said, they're the top translators of spiritual books in the country of Japan. They read your book, and they want to translate it into Japanese. Within 90 days, we had the best-selling spiritual book in the country of Japan, and we started finding abundance.
In your book,
pardon?
You make a statement. In
yes.
your book, you made a statement, and I had to chuckle when I read it.
Mm-hmm.
When you first saw this gentleman who is your guide,
mm-hmm.
you said, I must be eating too much Chinese food. Everybody has a really cool spirit guide, and for some reason I'm stuck with one that looks like Fu Manchu.
Yes. I'd only heard about spirit guides that people talked about that were like Native Americans or shaman, and they were like Merlin or something. I'd never heard of someone having a spirit guide that looked Asian, especially
mm-hmm.
like a Manchurian. And it wasn't until I did further research, and it was almost research that was just knocked me over the head with it rather than me looking for it initially, that I found that a lot of people had a guide like this, including James von Prague.
Well, whenever you go into a little bit of history, when you go into the history of spiritualism and actually just about every culture, they'll speak of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's different terms that are used. And that's why I was so interested in having you as a guest, because I've met with different people from different cultures from throughout the world. And they'll have a terminology. They'll talk about using the term of an angel. Sometimes they call them a spirit guide. They'll use so many terms, an essence, energy.
Mm-hmm.
There are all these different terms that people use. And in old-time spiritualism, that was something that they used to talk about all the time. They
mm-hmm.
would talk about the teams of people that would work with an individual and how they would change through the years and various different points of information. So when you talked about yours, when you talk about Chang,
mm-hmm.
I thought it was fascinating that in your book, you had to learn how to communicate with Chang. Now,
yeah.
he was communicating fairly clearly, and John Edwards'
mm-hmm.
audio tapes apparently were
yeah.
something that spurred you to make this link and this
yeah.
connection. But
mm-hmm.
it was more than just a link, as some people might think. There was really a lot more to this. But how? Let's take one thing at a time. How did you learn to talk to Chang?
I at first couldn't talk to him very well. It was very confusing for me because I had never done that much meditation, and I really didn't believe in spirit guides. And at first it was just kind of like almost hand gestures, or he was showing me things, or he would just kind of point things out to me. And as we went, we seemed to gain kind of a communication with each other. I don't know if it was verbal communication or mental communication exactly, but we gained a communication where I could understand him and he could understand me. He seemed to have been able to understand me from the beginning, though.
Mm-hmm. And, well, I think that's often the case.
But it was something that I really didn't believe in, so it wasn't something that I'd really consciously tried to do before.
So often, when people have these experiences, especially men, not so much women, because mm-hmm. women seem to have an innate capacity. Your wife, Francesca, was someone that just went with this. It's like,
yeah,
this is
her.
Cool. This mm-hmm. makes sense. With guys, usually, it is a tough sell because it's against everything that they've been indoctrinated with. Let's face it, you were an anthropologist.
Yeah.
You deal with hard facts, don't you?
But being an anthropologist, too, it makes me a little bit flexible. I'm able to say, you know, this seems kind of ridiculous. This seems kind of like something that couldn't really be happening. But on the other hand, there's lots of things in different cultures that maybe they're real. Maybe we just aren't open to.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe this is just something I'm closing myself off to. Maybe there is a reality to this. Something like Carlos Castaneda's work. You're familiar with his work, right?
Oh, yes, I am.
Yes. Where he didn't believe in a lot of things either. He was an anthropologist. And eventually, as it unfolded before his eyes and he realized there was more than one reality to the universe,
mm-hmm.
he was able to accept these things as real.
Yes, and there's that touch of personal experience that is so important. That's why I encourage anyone who is experiencing anything on the unique level to document it. To really be okay with putting down what your feelings were, write it down, though, because that seems to help the conscious self be more accepting.
What helped me a lot, too, is my wife wrote a lot of it down.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes when I'm saying, this is kind of, why are we doing this? Even the first books I was writing, I'm saying, come on, why are you doing this? I'm going to write down everything we see. I'm going to have people write down every experience they have. We're going to get this all documented. And so by the time we got down to the book, I had lots of documentation. I had the phone numbers of all the people. And it was a lot easier to do.
Oh, of course. And your wife was just doing you a big, big favor. Of course, she had an understanding of this. She had that awareness and that knowingness that said, this is not a game.
No.
This is something that's real. It is dealing with an alternate reality. And again, in my experience, every culture in the world has this.
Yes.
But it is something we need to be open to and receptive to. You talk a little bit about the Oracle of Delphi. You also talk about psychomantium.
Yes.
And that term is a term that's been around for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us where this came from and what it represents.
Okay, psychomantium is a Greek term. Actually, I learned the term from Dr. Raymond A. Moody, who's more famous for his term near-death experience. It's a term which means theater of the mind. And we ran into this in our store initially with the gallery of art that we have here. When people would have put their hands on it, sometimes they would get messages from their lost loved ones. We, in fact, had something happen last night.
Uh-huh.
My wife got a message from her father who passed away 2 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
it was more than just she thought she heard something. It was like we had a painting come off the wall. And these paintings never come up the wall, and the nail that was holding it was still there.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people do get messages from their lost loved ones here, too. And
very much so.
3D images of the people as well.
Now, you had the opportunity to go to Beijing.
Yes.
And when you did this, tell us how that trip came about, and then what you learned while you were experiencing that trip.
Well, my initial trip, we just kind of stumbled upon it. I was planning to actually book a trip to Greece to write a sequel to a book that I had written for the Japanese. But the only trip we found we were able to get was this trip to Beijing. And while we were there, we found out something about the Kangxi Emperor and about Cheng. Because when we got there, we found there was the Cheng tombs. And when we asked our guide about the Cheng tombs, he said there's no one named Cheng buried in any of the tombs. It's the word that means son of heaven. It's the word they use for all the emperors. So when we went back to the United States, we researched. We did computer research to find out who the person was that I was seeing. And then we did the meditations again and asked him, is this who you are?
Mm-hmm.
But then we went back to China again, and the second time we went to the Qing tombs, 4 hours east of Beijing, where not many American tourists have ever been. And that's when we actually got the real answers that really helped us to work out not only the mystery of what Cheng was trying to tell us, but our whole relationship.
Now, you had said in your book that as you were discovering this information and you were being made aware of certain details,
yeah,
regarding past life experience, and there was this step-by-step situation that you went through.
Yes.
And you found that you and Francesca had been together in the 17th century.
Yes.
And then your wife really got into it, and she said, okay, tell me more. And she found out at that time she had been a princess.
Yes.
What happened after that?
Okay. We found eventually, by doing meditation, that we'd had a relationship kind of like the butterfly lovers. That I was a counselor to the emperor, and I was just a Chinese person, and she was a Manchurian person. I was a Han Chinese. She was Manchurian, and that in those days they were forbidden to be together because the Manchurians felt they were superior to the Han Chinese, racially superior. So something happened, and we were pulled apart. She was sent to Mongolia, and I lost her at that point. And it caused a cosmic rift in the universe to occur, and it's what led to us getting back together in this lifetime to try to solve it.
Now, the word butterfly.
Yes.
That's how, this is all about how the title of the book came about.
Yes.
Butterfly.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us how she found out the meaning of butterfly relative to her name, Francesca.
Well, he kept calling her butterfly and saying that your name means butterfly, but when we found Chinese people that spoke Mandarin that came to our store, we would ask them how to say butterfly, and they'd say, Hutia. And she said, no, that's not what it's supposed to be. That's not my name. My name is Francesca. And they say, no, it's butterfly Hutia. But then something strange started happening. Within a week, we started getting unrequested items in the boxes that we'd ordered. All of them had golden swallow-tailed butterflies in them. So when the next Chinese person came in, we pulled out the butterfly picture we got in the box, in one of the boxes, and showed it to them, and they said, Hutia. I said, no. What kind of butterfly is that? They said, oh, that's a Franchière. So the name did kind of go along with butterfly, like Cheng had told her. And it helped to validate everything we were getting.
Your story is an ongoing one.
It is.
You have this regarding you calling Cheng. Is it Chang or Cheng? It's C-H-A-N-G.
Well, he Chinese is such a weird language. It has four tones to everything. And as far as I can tell, it's something like Cheng.
Oh,
and it's never spelled the way it's never spelled the way it's pronounced either.
Yes, I understand that with the Chinese, that you can say the same word so many different ways and they will each have different meanings because of the tones.
That's right.
But with this journey that you and your wife have experienced, where you have had this information given to you, Cheng has been with you, has shared who he was,
mm-hmm,
and why it was important for you to connect.
Yes.
Is he still a major part of your life?
Yes, he is. In fact, we're working on another book. We've got the beginning and the middle worked out. We're still working on the ending. But, yes, we talk to him at least 3 or 4 times a week about everything. Plus, we have people coming to the store with this book. We sold almost 1,000 copies of this book just in the store. So we have someone coming tonight,
mm-hmm,
that want to talk to Cheng.
Mm-hmm. When you do this, how would you... Well, let me rephrase my question I was going to ask. How has this affected your life, and what do you feel is the greatest benefit of this particular experience for other people who are listening to the show today?
Okay, this is something really, really important that I think that someone who reads my book, The Secret of the Butterfly Lovers, will get. And this is what, and if they haven't got it, when people come to me and ask me what my message to them is, it is always to love yourself. Love yourself. That there's nobody higher, there's nobody lower. We are all one. We are all beings of light made in the image of God, and God is light. By knowing this, you're not going to let anyone take your power from you. You're going to be able to find health, wealth, and true love in your life. I tell people a story, maybe I'll put it in my next book, about Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, about who the good guys and bad guys are. I said the bad guys have to be the dwarfs and the good guys to be the witch, because the dwarfs are holding her back from accomplishing what she has to accomplish. It's the witch that brings her that apple. And by even taking the leap of faith and taking that bite from that apple, that she finds health, wealth, and true love. And you just have to be able to be brave enough and love yourself enough to be able to make that leap of faith.
With what you've gone through, what is the greatest change you've seen in yourself?
I think I found more respect for others. I found more respect for myself. I've been able to interact with people better. I mean, we formed a big group. We have that meets every month. We have another group that meets every week. It's changed our whole life. It's changed the whole way we run the store, the way we deal with people. It changed everything.
With your second book that's going to be coming out, I'm sure it is going to be just as interesting a read as your Secret of the Butterfly Lovers.
It will be.
And I will say that in reading your book, I think that your clarity in describing your experiences and everything that you've gone through can be very insightful to anybody who is listening, who has had certain experiences, maybe wants to explore more about an understanding that they're never alone. Nobody is ever alone.
That's right.
And when you can understand that, then that makes you aware that there is a greater depth to life.
Yeah.
And there is so much more going on than we even have a vague idea about.
Sure.
You, in your epilogue, you talk about secrets that were revealed.
Yes.
You talk about Chung and that you went through extensive research, both on the computer and through libraries.
Mm-hmm.
And you found that everything that had been given to you in the way of information was absolutely correct.
Yes. You can tell I'm an anthropologist. I'll go back and check the facts.
Absolutely. But I thought that was so interesting in that Chung was on a major campaign in 1690 to reunify China.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he wanted to reclaim the Mongolian territories held by Kublai Khan in the 13th century.
Yes. Yes.
And the story that and information here is woven with historical facts, real personal experiences, and again, an openness about what was going on with this. And I would imagine that your life, as you've said, has changed dramatically. Where do you think you're going to go to from here with this?
I'm not sure. We're planning a trip to Egypt in the fall. We've done some research and we found that the Chung, we've gone back further with Chung. We found that he wasn't a pharaoh in Egypt 2,000 years ago, and we're going to try to find out something about that too. You see, the characters in the book change. He was an emperor in China in the 17th century, but he was an emperor in Egypt 2,000 years ago too. Just like I worked for the emperor in the 17th century, and I'm back here now doing this. Running an angel store and trying to work out this karmic relationship with Francesca.
Well, I'll tell you, folks, there's more good things to come and more interesting stories to tell.
Mm-hmm.
My guest today has been Keith Richardson. Your story is one that is fascinating, and those listening may say, yeah, it sounds like a bunch of hooey, Donna. But you never know until you walk the walk that someone else has walked. And this book enables you to do it very comfortably. The Secret of the Butterfly Lovers, Eternal Lessons of Life, love, and reincarnation. Keith, what is your website, quickly?
It is angelgift.com. That's A-N-G-E-L-G-I-F-T.com. And the book is available everywhere in the whole world.
Okay. Angel?
Amazon.com, everywhere.
Great. Angelgift.com. Keith,
but if you order from me, I will send it to you free shipping, and I will sign it to you.
All right, Keith. Thanks ever so much. You have a fabulous day.
Okay, thanks.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't you go away now. More good things to come. We'll be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Hello, this is Dr. Richard Petty, author of Healing, Meaning, and Purpose, and creator of the RichardGPettyMD.com website. I am thrilled and delighted to tell you that starting February 7th, 2008, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be joining my friend Donna Sebo on her show on bbsradio.com. We're going to do this every month, and I can guarantee you that we're going to be sharing new information and new concepts that will astonish and inspire you.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and telephone lines are open. That's right. If you want to give me a buzz and chat, you'll be able to do so. Here are the numbers, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227, or Canadians 888-815-9756. That's 888-815. Hello. Well, this is Donna again. We just had a bleep on the computer screen of some type, so here we go. 877-876-5227. Telephone lines are open. 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. Well, I wanted to share a quote with you. I had a couple of them that just really pushed my buttons. We're starting off in the beginning of the week, and by golly, it is absolutely imperative that we pay attention to how our minds are going. Have you ever suddenly found yourself in a funk and you just go, blah? I mean, it's like, oh, nothing's working. I swear, there's peanut butter in my brain gears. Well, we all go through that at some time or another. The key is to make a statement to yourself, wait a minute, I got to get out of this fog. Sometimes it may mean you take a five-minute nap, or you just get out and walk outside in the fresh air, or you do something that's going to make a shift. But you recognize that it's there, and then you say, I've got to do something about it. And then you'll be able to get out of it. Well, when I was thinking about the show today, I wanted to do something about success. Now, success is a very individual perception. One person's success would not necessarily be represented in the same way to someone else. But I liked what John Stewart, William and Mary, what he said. He said, the unfortunate, truly exciting thing about your life is that there is no core curriculum. Now think about that. The unfortunate, truly exciting thing about your life is that there is no core curriculum. The entire place is an elective. The paths are infinite and the results uncertain. College is something you complete. Life is something you experience. So don't worry about your grades or the results or success, because success is defined in a myriad of ways, and you will find it. And people won't be grading you. I know we have some friends, their kids are going to be graduating. And that particular quote really took hold, because I think so many times with young people, no matter, and I've known a lot of mature people too, that they'll think that they're through one phase in their life and they're going to be able to compartmentalize everything. They're going to be having A plus B equaling C. Well, what I found in life is frequently A plus W equals Q. It doesn't come out the same way. And the best laid plans of, what is it, mice and men can go awry. And that happens more frequently than we'd ever imagine. Sometimes we think we'd like to have life as it's done in the movies, and everything turns out with a happy ending, and it may not necessarily turn out that way. But life is an experience. Life is something you have to live. And what I have noticed, as far as my own life goes, and the thousands upon thousands that I've observed, is that there are those motivations, those experiences, not unlike Keith, the experiences he had that have led him into a totally different environment of life experience than he ever had a direction for. No way did he have a conscious idea that he was going to end up effectively being like a trance medium and being able to have these unique experiences that led him to halfway around the world to find out things that he didn't even know existed. That happens with so many of us. And when we can realize that sometimes we're put into uncomfortable situations for the purpose of growth, for the purpose of development, then we're not so harsh on ourselves. We can look at what our experiences have been and be able to utilize them in a very positive way that's going to sort of send out a major ripple. It'll send out such an extensive ripple, because if we use things in a positive format and we look at it, and I'm not saying being Pollyannish, but if you really look at the reality of what's there, you utilize the energy of something that could be otherwise very unpleasant and reframe it so that it ends up working for you and not against you, you are going to be way, way ahead of the game. It is so significant. So when I saw that quote, I thought, that's one I got to share with you, because it is a good one. So remember, the entire experience of life is elective. Paths are infinite, and the results are uncertain. Believe it or not, that's a good thing. Think of how boring this world would be if we knew everything that was going to evolve. Donna Sebo here. Give me a call if you would like for me to light up your life with a little bit of insight. And here are the telephone numbers to call into, 877-876-5227, or Canadians, 888-815-9756, also 530-876-3222. And all you need to do when I answer the phone line, give me your first name or your initial. And of course, I love to know where you're calling from. After that, just let me speak what I'm going to speak. And remember, I'm just an information resource. I like to tell people I am a tool that has had a lot of refinement over the years, and it's an ongoing process of refinement and expertise, and it's something that I'm happy to share with you on the show. So all you need to do is just give me a buzz. I have been getting some wonderful stories and some great information, and I wanted to share a couple of them with you. This one that I'm going to share first is about a farmer, And I've heard different renditions of this story, but I really, really liked this one. There was a farmer that had some puppies he needed to sell. He painted a sign advertising the four puppies, and he set about nailing a sign on a post on the edge of his yard. Now, as he was nailing in the last nail into the post, he felt somebody tugging on his overalls. Now, he looked down, and he sees this little boy, and he had the biggest, biggest eyes. And the little boy, as soon as this man turned around and looked at him, he said, "Mister, I want to buy one of your puppies." And the farmer just looked at the little boy, raised an eyebrow, and he said, "Well, just a minute here." And so he took a handkerchief out of his back pocket and was wiping the sweat off the back of his neck and then off of his hands. And he looked at the boy, and he stood back a little bit from him, and he said, "You know, son, these puppies come from fine parents, and they cost a good deal of money." Well, the little boy, he sort of looked down at the ground, and then he dug down deep into his small jeans, and he pulled out a handful of change, and he held it up to the farmer. He said, "I've got 39 cents. Is that enough where I can look at the puppies?" And the farmer looked at him and said, "Yeah, keep your change. Sure, you go ahead and look. Come on, we'll go over here. We'll stand by the fence." And so then he whistled for the puppies and also for the mom, and her name was Dolly. So he called out, "Hey, come on, Dolly, come on out." And out from the doghouse and down the ramp of the doghouse ran the mama dog, Dolly, and her four little puppies, little balls of fur, just following her as quickly as they could on their tiny legs. Well, the little boy was thrilled, and he looked and was watching all of this activity with the mom and the puppies, and his eyes were just sparkling, and the farmer was watching him very carefully. Now, the little boy happened to look up at the doghouse that all of the animals had been in, and he noticed something moving. And then here's this little tiny ball of fluff that starts coming down this ramp. And it was so much smaller than the other puppies. And it started coming down the ramp, and then it slid. And when it got to the bottom of the ramp and was in the dirt, so it got up a little slowly and shook itself off, and the little pup began moving towards the mama dog. And the puppy was taking a long time to get there. It was having a hard time. And the little boy pulled on the pant legs of the farmer. The farmer said, "What is it?" The little boy said, "I want that one." Pointing to the little runt that was having such a tough time keeping up with the rest of the family. The farmer knelt down on his knees right next to the side of the boy. And he said, "Son, you don't want that puppy. That little puppy's never going to be able to run and play with you like these other dogs can." The little boy looked at the farmer, his eyes just ever so big and ever so serious. And he stepped back from the farmer, who was still kneeling in the dirt. He stepped back a little bit. And he began to roll up one leg of his trousers. When he was doing this, the farmer noticed that there was a steel brace that was running down both sides of this little boy's leg, attaching itself to a specially made shoe. He looked at that farmer after he pulled his trouser leg up. He said, "You see, sir, I don't run too well myself. That puppy will need somebody who understands him." By this time, the farmer had tears in his eyes. He reached down over the fence and picked up that little tiny pup. He held it very carefully in his large hands. Then he handed it to the little boy. The little boy asked him, "How much?" The farmer said, "No charge. There's no charge for love. The world is full of people who need someone who understands them." I know it's sort of a tearjerker, but that's okay. I love it. There is no charge for love. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. Don't forget, you can give me a call. I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. Buzz me at 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. We're taking a break, and we're going to be back in just a minute. Ooh, have a pad of paper and a pen handy. I have got cold chocolate drink recipe. Yum. Perfect for this wonderful, wonderful warm weather we are coming into. So have that handy, and I'll share it with you when we come back. Donna Siebel here. We'll be right back.
Want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Siebel to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227. Remember, all I need is your first name or your initial. And 888-815-9756. Now, by the way, I want to let you know who's going to be coming on with me this week. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Teresa Tapp. Boy, I'm telling you, she has always so much good information to share about how to stay physically fit. And I can tell you that I've toned up 21 inches overall since I started implementing her exercise system. And she tells you, don't worry about the weight. Well, we're going to be hearing tomorrow about cellulite. This is something that for you gals, you are all going to groan and say, oh, do I know about this? I mean, never mind. We'll talk about it tomorrow. So anyway, Teresa's going to be on with me tomorrow. And then we're going to be talking money on Wednesday. Robin C. Davis is going to be my guest. Who is sitting on your nest egg? This is such a comprehensive book. You're really going to want to add it to your library. And then The Wise Secrets of Aloha. Garnett Aldridge is going to be my guest. And we're going to be talking about some of the wisdom that the old kahunas shared. And sometimes people will say to me, well, maybe these people didn't do so good with their wisdom. Look at what happened to them. Well, wisdom is wisdom, regardless of its culture, its time, or its frame. And I think you'll find The Wise Secrets of Aloha very interesting. And then we're going to be going to the UK on Friday. Teresa Chung is going to be my guest. We're going to be talking about one of my favorite beverages, tea. Tea Bliss. Yes, we're going to learn all about different kinds of things regarding tea, and I think you'll find this week most enjoyable with our various guests. Don't forget, you can always go into our website, find out who's going to be coming up. And, of course, we've got a wonderful, wonderful lineup of people between now and the end of the month. And this is ongoing. We have all of these wonderfully talented people that we're able to bring to you through the bbsradio.com. And don't forget, we have the archives. If you should miss a program, I was talking with someone yesterday who said, it's so nice your shows are archived because I cannot listen to them. Often when you're on the air, I'm busy working, but I can go home and I can turn it on and I can hear what has been going on. So just know that that's available to you. Now, by the way, I do want to bring up some facts of information regarding wellness. And this one particularly, I had just in the last 4 days encountered conversations with people that have gone through hip transplants and or maybe considering it. This is some information that I just came across, and it is so important because it may be something that you could pass along to a friend. And this is out of the Readers, no, out of Prevention Magazine, June, the June issue. And it's about hip, arthritis of the hip. And I have known people that have suffered so terribly with this. In fact, I know of one woman. She's not even in her 50s yet, and she's had to have both of her hips replaced. And it was just such a difficult time for the doctors because they, and this was done about 10 years ago. So she was in her 30s, and they really didn't want to operate on her, but she was in such excruciating pain, they had to do it. They just didn't have any choice. Well, what they've discovered, if you develop mild to moderate forms of osteoarthritis of the hips in your 40s or earlier, you're usually told to wait until you're in your late 50s or in your 60s for a full or partial hip replacement. And at that time, when they do it, the entire neck and head of the thigh bone, the femur, or just the head, are replaced. And they have various materials that they use. Frequently, it's done with metal parts. Now, when they do this, it means you're going to have limited movement and you may have ongoing pain. But the reason they want you to wait is that metal hips last up to 20 years. And in a recent British study, they lasted this long in only half of the osteoarthritis patients under the age of 40. It's a very important point. Now, they've got another process or procedure that can be done. Hip resurfacing. Now, in this procedure, surgeons will reshape the top of the thigh bone and cover it with a metal cap that sits inside a thin metal hip socket. And this blocks painful nerve endings on both sides. So, you're not going to have as much discomfort. And more bone is left intact than with a replacement, which makes any future surgeries or adjustments a lot easier to perform. And therefore, they'll be more successful. So, if you want to check this out, you need to find out about the hip resurfacing pros. And you can, there is a Dr. William McAlay, MD, who is really speaking out about this because he thinks it's great. And he's the director of the Center for Hip and Knee Replacement at New York Presbyterian Hospital, Columbia. So this data regarding the hip resurfacing is only about 9 years old. So you may want to check it out, and I don't have any websites here that are listed. But the rest of the story that they have is quite an interesting one. So you might want to check it out because it's something that if you have a loved one that's going through this, looking at having to do this surgery, it is major, major surgery. So you want to be sure that you have it checked out and checked out thoroughly. So check out your hip resurfacing. Check out the pros and the cons. And talk with someone who's familiar with it. Your doctor may not know about it. It's relatively new. So if you can find the information, pass it along to your doctor. There may be someone that you can link up with that will enable you to keep you from having to have the real serious surgery. And who knows? They may come up with something better in the next few years where they may be able to just rebuild whatever's been damaged. And you may not have to have a replacement. All kinds of options. Don't forget, a lot of people are doing a lot of evaluations, a lot of thinking about how things can be done better, how they can be done more effectively, and how we can experience wellness. We're seeing a big shift in thinking, which I think is marvelous by the many, many people in the medical profession. And also engineers that are the type of people that work out different programs and different things. I've got material that came across my desk regarding robotic surgery, all kinds of things that are evolving, that are making things more successful. And the attitude of prevention, preventive maintenance, if you will, is really going to become quite the norm. We're seeing shifts. Why? Because we as the public are demanding more and more of this. A whole new persona is developing in the world of medicine. And that's very, very good. this is Donna Sebo. We're out of time. Don't forget, we're going to be getting fit with Teresa Tapp tomorrow, and I'll be here with special stories and special things to share. Donna Sebo, remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Isn't it nice to know that you're in the driver's seat? That's right. You're in charge. What are you going to do? What direction are you going to take? Have you figured out what map you're going to use yet? Good question. Have fun thinking about it. Donna Sebo here. Talk with you manana. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.